1220, and it's a pleasure to welcome back Dr. Debbie Ackerman, who really, as I said at the beginning, I want to thank her for her great input in the program. I want to thank Marcia and Michael Lax again for their sponsorship of the program. And Dr. Debbie, we met her when she spoke at our medical conference, and I think you'll really, she's a professor at Wurzweiler, has much experience in trauma, Wurzweiler in New York City.
Right.
Now we're going to move to this side of the Atlantic, and Bakasha, Dr. Debbie, it's all yours.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good afternoon to everybody in America, everybody in Israel, and all other places. I'm just going to take a minute to introduce myself, kind of level the playing field so you know who I am. Dr. Debbie Ackerman, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I have a doctorate in social work, or what's called social welfare. My clinical expertise is in addiction and trauma, and my dissertation revolved around addiction in the Orthodox Jewish community. I am full-time faculty at Wurzweiler School of Social Work at Yeshiva University, and I also have a private practice in Northern Jersey. When I'm not doing that, I am a very proud mommy of 11 children and of 8 stepchildren, and currently of 2 fur babies who we adore, 2 gorgeous little puppies. And that's kind of a little bit about me. I wanted to begin by thanking all of the participants who have been speaking today. I am absolutely blown away and in awe by the stories, by the knowledge, by the strength that everybody here has exhibited. And I also wanted to have a very special thank you to Rabbi Jay and Mrs. Alana Kelman, who I have had the privilege of working with before. Their incredible efforts in putting this program and other programming together. They continue to illuminate and educate our community with wonderful programming all through the year. And it is really an honor to continue to work with them. It's also really unbelievable to be part of this esteemed panel. Indefatigable individuals, people who have worked tirelessly for our community for years to promote healing, to promote growth, professionals that I have long admired, that I have long learned from. And so this is really humbling to be part of such an incredible panel. I contemplated putting together a PowerPoint presentation for my presentation today, because I know that PowerPoints is a really very wonderful way to disseminate information in a very organized and cogent manner. And I have learned an enormous amount thus far this morning. But I started to reflect, and I thought to myself that a presentation on spirituality, I felt, really would benefit from as much face-to-face or as much Zoom-to-face connection as we possibly could have. In these turbulent times, I really feel that the ability to see each other, to draw from each other's energy, is one of the essential ingredients to our collective standing together and healing. The learning goal for this presentation, it is really my fervent hope that this presentation will provide a lot of personal and professional perspective that will bring peace and purpose and the ability to persevere. We know that trauma instances can range from 50 to 90% of individuals that will suffer one or more traumas in their lifetime. Some studies even suggest that some individuals will have 5 or more traumas in their lifetime. The sudden death of a loved one, natural disaster, crime, economic catastrophe, domestic violence, addiction, childhood abuse in all its forms, and war are just some of the events that contribute to this high number. These are undoubtedly daunting statistics and will include most everybody on this screen. Trauma, as Dr. Bessel van der Kolk in his book, The Body Keeps the Score, is what he calls, quote, unbearable and intolerable. According to the American Psychological Association, trauma is an emotional response to a terrible event like an accident, rape, or a natural disaster. Immediately after event, shock and denial are typical. Longer-term reactions may include unpredictable emotions, flashbacks, strained relationships, and even physical symptoms like nausea and headaches. And finally, to quote Dr. Judith Herman in her book, Trauma and Recovery, quote, to study psychological trauma is to come face to face with human vulnerability in the natural world and the capacity for evil in human nature. As a practicing social worker, my education and training begin with and constantly invoke the innate strength and resilience of a human being and the human spirit. One of the basic tenets of social work practice is the strength theory, that inborn ability of all humans to behave in a resilient manner and their ability to heal and grow from their circumstances. In an article by Dennis Salaby of 1996, he states that, quote, "The strength perspective demands a different way of looking at individuals, at families, and communities. All," states Salaby, "must be looked at in light of their capacity, their talents, their competencies, their possibilities, their visions, their values, and hopes, no matter how dashed and distorted they may be through their circumstance, their oppression, and their trauma." Utilizing this perspective, the concept of spirituality is introduced into our work. Social work utilizes a holistic approach, one that we know as PIE, the person in their environment, and that assesses each individual, each family, each community from a bio, psycho, social, spiritual perspective. But what exactly is spirituality? Is it religion? Is it instead of religion? Is it in addition to religion? Can a person be religious and not spiritual? Can a person be spiritual and not religious? And can one be both? And even if we can define spirituality in a manner which we are comfortable with, can it really help? Can the concept of spirituality really reduce the awfulness and the horror of trauma? In an article by Ari, Bilson, Lacour, and DeShepper of 2016, they state that, quote, "Spirituality and religion are often used interchangeably, but the two concepts are very different. Some authors contend that spirituality involves a personal quest for meaning of life, while religion involves an organized entity with rituals and practices from a higher power or God. Spirituality may be related to religion for certain individuals, but not for everyone. And according to Dr. Maya Spencer in 2012, quote, "Spirituality involves a recognition of a feeling or sense of belief that there's something greater than yourself, something more to being human than the sensory experience and the greater whole of which we're part of, cosmic and divine in nature. Spirituality means knowing that our lives have significance in a context beyond our mundane everyday existence, beyond our biological needs that drive selfishness and aggression. It means knowing that we are a significant part of purposeful unfolding of life in our universe. It involves exploring certain universal themes, themes of love, themes of compassion, themes of altruism, the themes of life after death, of wisdom and truth, and with the knowledge that some people, some enlightened individuals, have achieved and manifested higher levels of development than any ordinary person. Aspiring to manifest the attributes of such inspirational examples can become an important part of the journey through life for spiritually inclined people. And this journey involves first healing and affirming the ego that positive states are experienced, and those include secure self-esteem, a belief in self-worth, and a capacity for love and generosity." For purposes of this talk, we're going to invoke spirituality as meaning. As such, individuals can be highly spiritual and not religious. They can be deeply religious and not spiritual. And for those lucky enough, or for those who have worked on themselves enough, they have the ability to enjoy both of these realms. In the seminal article, "Our Clients Ourselves, the Spiritual Perspective of Social Work," written by Dr. Patricia Sermabikian, who I am fortunate to know, the concept of spirituality is discussed. Dr. Sermabikian states that there are those who question what is the usefulness of spirituality. But she states that spirituality is one of the key tools in our arsenal of coping, and that is exactly why it has to be acknowledged. Dr. Sermabikian further states, "In order to begin any conversation on spirituality in our lives, Our regular linear way of thinking must be abandoned. Carl Jung, who was Sigmund Freud's prized student, broke with Freud over the concept of spirituality. Jung correctly posited that there had to be more to man than just the internal drives of Freud's world. Jung posited that man had a spiritual component, and that was as important, if not more, than the drives of Freud's world. Part of Jung's work was the creation of different personality types or archetypes that he created. The most noted and known is what he called the wounded healer. The wounded healer was originally created for the medical community, but it is now recognized as important for the work in mental health professionals as well. And the premise is that the healer has also suffered. The healer that has suffered will be able to be far more empathic, will be able to be far more connected because of the shared experience between the practitioner and the patient. The practitioner will literally have the ability to feel what the patient and the client is experiencing. Spirituality, as opposed to religion, is a very individual pursuit. Religion, which is our rules, prayers, and practices that are created by a deity and get disseminated through prophets, through sages, messengers, and disciples. Spirituality encompasses humans in a non-linear way. What directs our spirit? What moves a person profoundly in a way that can help them not only with everyday challenges, but from the confusion of pain and trauma? And echoing the words of Dr. Viktor Frankl, the author of Man's Search for Meaning, he states, quote, "If life is to have meaning, then there has to be meaning in the suffering of life." Like many here today, I am no stranger to suffering and to trauma, and I humbly ask that I share some of my experiences and some of my own spiritual quests that were helpful to me. Listening to the esteemed panel today, I am really completely overwhelmed with the amount of human strength and resilience that we are witnessing. Please accept my story with a caveat. There are no two traumas or trauma journeys that are alike, and therefore there are no two healing journeys that are alike. Part of the spiritual conquest or the spiritual quest is to recognize the individuality and to respect the individual and their own journey of healing. So what does trauma feel like? Well, for me, each of the traumas that I faced definitely had similarities to them. I hearken back to a broiling August day 10 and a half years ago when I was told that my son had brain cancer. Beginning with the actual biology of it, there was this feeling of being hit with an emotional tsunami. Shock, confusion, bewilderment, accompanied strong physical sensations of a rapid heartbeat, sweaty palms, shallow breathing, an intense headache, and a stomach ache and disorientation. Classic fight, flight, or freeze. It was as if I was frozen in time while I was simultaneously falling through a deep, dark, endless vortex, a cone-shaped abyss that left me with nothing to hang on to. I can still close my eyes, and I can see the waiting room. I can see the staff. I know what I was wearing, and I can still see that searing image of my son's face as he absorbed the horrible news. I was a single mother at the time with 11 children, 9 of them at home on that fateful day at NYU's Langone Hospital. The words of Jesse Taft, "Time is a medium of helping," from a 1949 article, reverberated in my mind. How the unbelievable difficulty that any human being, no matter how weak, makes himself or brings himself to ask for help. This tsunami of a diagnosis followed what now seemed like a tiny hurricane of a public and painful divorce that was finalized a mere 4 months before that day. That divorce left me not only with a very large family to raise, but pretty much financially ruined. That familiar wake-up call at 4 a.m., with a dozen elephants in pink tutus marching across my chest, returned that night right on schedule. Trauma reactions and anxiety are, if anything, prompt and highly routinized and scheduled. They never miss their 4 a.m. appearance, no matter how bone-tired or weary you are, and the concept of Shabbos does not exist in the lexicon of anxiety and trauma. And when my son passed away 1 year later, the need to rely on spiritual concepts became not only necessary, but life-affirming and completely essential. So what was it that helped? I have thought about this many, many times during this 10-plus year journey. If the following is even somewhat helpful to anyone, then I am incredibly grateful for this opportunity. We are all here to help one another, to shed any and all of our ego, and work for the collective good of our people. The first thing that helped is time. We live in a very here and now world where everything that we want happens in an instant and we don't wait for anything. Trauma healing takes a very long time, and as I continue to discover, a lifetime. There are no quick fixes, there is no instant magic cure, and even medicine that a person can take to ameliorate symptoms will just provide relief and not healing. I would like to give credit to our next presenter, Dr. Norman Blumenthal, who I was working with at the time of my son's illness and death. Dr. Blumenthal, with incredible kindness and gentleness, told me not to expect any type of recovery from this event for the first 5 years. I listened to his words, and as much as I did not want to believe them, I knew then that it was true. Breathing at that point was becoming challenging, and it was not because of any cardiac or pulmonary event. It was the crushing and overwhelming anxiety and grief that was literally taking my breath away. The first 3 to 5 years after monumental trauma are a blur. As much as our resilience is there and we attempt to function to our best capacity, the physical and emotional realities of coping with this assault cannot be denied. I did keep busy. I was working. I was writing a dissertation. I showed up to work and to school the day after Shiva. I was in a new marriage and I was caring for a large family. But as we know, and as Dr. Vanderkolk has told us, the body does keep the score. And the depression and anxiety that followed me everywhere until even I had to admit that I could not do this by myself. But I look back at my experience of resilience, and I see that despite the fact I felt I was walking through cement every single minute of my life, I was there. I was functioning. I was writing a dissertation. I was functioning to the best of my ability. I was showing up to work. I was trying my best. This highlights another important factor of time. I was future-oriented. The ability to look at the future, the ability to plan for the future, is tantamount in healing. Our national anthem, HaTikvah, speaks of our nation's everlasting hope that we will survive, we will thrive, and we will be better. One of the survivors of the Nova Festival has been showing all over the internet her tattoo that says, "We will dance again," a tattoo that moved me to tears. We hear about weddings. We have heard this morning of a presenter whose son is a hostage and 10 days later made a wedding. We see soldiers getting married on base. We celebrate births. We must remain future-oriented in order to help us heal from the trauma. The second thing that I thought and have found is incredibly helpful is what we call sensual activities. The ability to soothe ourselves through our senses is well known and readily available. Art, journaling, dance, yoga are all tools that allow for the expression of emotion in a different form. There is tremendous healing in coloring. Always look at kids for healing. It is rhythmic and it is mindful. There is tremendous healing in cooking, in chopping, smelling, textures, and tasting. There is healing in baking and putting your hands in dough and working with it, in gardening, of putting your hands in earth and water and helping cultivate new life through fruits, through vegetables, and through foliage. And I am very partial to music. Music resonates with me very deeply, and in my opinion, is a very powerful, sensual, and spiritual tool. Music plays an integral role in spirituality as it communicates emotion, thoughts, religion, and culture. The great composer Ludwig van Beethoven quoted, quote, "Music is the mediator between the spiritual and the sensual." And going to a completely different art form, Bob Marley stated, quote, "One good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain." Music can play a central role in finding spiritual encouragement. It is an integral part of many people's lives and their routine. In an article by Rabbi Adam Jacobs, who is a neighbor and member of our community, he wrote, quote, "Every person has their own musical ladder, a distinct melody that allows one to draw from their own spiritual sustenance into this world." And he quotes that by Rabbi Kolonimus Kalman Shapiro in his great work, To Heal the Soul. This melody is exclusive, and it cannot be performed by anyone else. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov expanded on this idea and stated that each and every blade of grass sings its own melody as well. In a very interesting point, Rabbi Jacobs expounds and tells us, quote, "As science has developed the technological capability to peer deeper and deeper into the essence of matter, we find familiar notion of minute balls or dots in matter that has formed, electrons, protons, neutrons, and the like. But this picture is now inadequate, and the concept of what we call superstring theory, a relatively new attempt to explain it, may be more accurate. Superstring theory, which was developed in the early 70s, is an attempt to harmonize Einstein's general relativity with quantum mechanics. I don't understand any of this. The point is, however, the theory suggests that the tiny matter of the proton is actually composed of ultra-small, one-dimensional strings of energy, the vibrations of which give rise to all physical activity. It is as if the universe is created and sustained through sound, or the universe is actually singing its own tune." A few years after my son and my granddaughter's passing, I was working with a young man who had a very complex trauma history and was trying to get into recovery from multiple substance abuses. This young man had seen much more than anybody should have seen, a huge history of all different types of childhood abuse, physical, emotional, and sexual. And it was seen in his eyes that were traumatized and very, very sad. Talking during therapy was not going to happen and was not on the table. I suggested that we start listening to music, and the client agreed. I began to play what a cherished colleague calls heart songs, songs of love, songs of hope, and songs of healing. And I watched as this young man sat on the couch and cried for an hour. Week after week, the scenario repeated itself. The client gave me full rein of what music to choose, and he sat there every single week and cried. Eventually, the client went into an inpatient facility, and our work was terminated. Years later, I received a message from the client. He told me he was doing very well. He was sober, he was productive, and he was at peace. But he also told me he would never forget the afternoons in my office, sitting on the couch and listening to music, and that one of the songs that particularly resonated with him, he continued to play and continued to cry. But this time those tears were tears of someone who was healing and someone who was able to connect that powerful emotion to a song that we had listened to together. When I work with clients today, I routinely ask them if there are songs that have meaning to them. Clients share their songs, and we exchange music. I have been blessed to learn many more genres of music. I have heard clients' original compositions. I have sung with my clients, and I have been blessed to talk with my clients in that universal language of spirituality and healing, the language of music. This brings me to point number three in our spiritual quest, people. I think that the only thing that is more difficult than enduring trauma is enduring trauma alone. The connection of family, the connection of friends and community is pivotal in the recovery process. Dr. Bessel van der Kolk states that, quote, study after study shows that having a good support network constitutes the single most powerful protection against becoming traumatized. Safety and terror are incompatible. When we are terrified, nothing calms us down like the reassuring voice or the firm embrace of someone that we trust and love. Frightened adults respond to the same comforts as terrified children. Gentle holding and rocking, and the assurance that someone bigger and stronger is there to take care of things so that you can safely go to sleep. In order to recover, the mind, body, and brain need to be convinced that it is safe to let go. And after an acute trauma, survivors require the familiar people, the familiar face, and the familiar voices. Survivors require physical contact and comfort, food, shelter, a safe place, and a time to sleep. It is critical to communicate to family and friends in a place that feels safe. Our attachment bonds are our greatest protection against threat. End of quote. I know with 100% certainty that it was the love and support of my children, the love and support of my brand new husband and of my friends that saw me through. And when 15 months later, my granddaughter was killed in a car accident, our God-given resilience, our incredible, strong, and unwavering love of each other in our family found us rallying around our daughter and her family. My granddaughter's sudden death, literally from 1 hour to the next, vaulted me into a reality check of being a mother who had to drop everything, including her own grief, to be there and care for her daughter, to protect her daughter to the best of my ability, so that I could take some of the pain away, so that I could cushion the suffering that I knew was coming. Family and community support and the presence of those that represented safety were again the steady storm amidst an incredible whirling storm. Allow me, please, one word of caution here. With all of the wonderful support that our families and that our friends and that our communities provide us, it is of utmost importance to allow the individual as much autonomy and self-determination as possible. It is so tempting to swoop in and take over. We see our loved ones suffering, and we want to do anything and everything we can to take away that pain. But trauma will obliterate all of our choices, and it will leave us victims to circumstances that we cannot control. I again need to give credit where credit is due. And during my tenure working with Dr. Blumenthal, I felt safe disclosing with tremendous difficulty what I was experiencing. I will never forget, I told Dr. Blumenthal my son was dying. He reached into his desk drawer and he pulled out a key ring. Handing it to me, he said, "Here are the keys to my office. You are welcome to use it anytime you want. And I did. It was a place to go, a place that I could choose to go, a place that I could choose to go to cry, to pray, to reach out to my support system, and many times a place where I went, shut the door, closed the lights, and just laid down in the complete pitch darkness to just breathe. Dr. Blumenthal knew how imperative choice was in this situation, and in this incredibly kind gesture allowed for the first anchors of healing to take hold. And finally, acceptance. Acceptance is not happiness. Acceptance is acceptance. It is acceptance of who you are and where you or your loved one are in their journey. Acceptance if you're angry, angry at the world, angry at your circumstances, angry at Hashem. Acceptance of every single one of your feelings, anger, hopelessness, grief, fear. No matter how intense, no matter how far flung, no matter how intertwined, and no matter how consuming. Acceptance that there is a future and you will heal. Acceptance that things will not be the same, but that you will and can create the new normal that works for you with the spirituality that you have gleaned, the meaning that you have chosen, that you continue to choose to ascribe to the events that you have faced. I, along with the rest of our community and nation, have been devastated and riveted watching the events that have unfolded since October 7th. I look at the faces of our people, the soldiers, the released hostages, the families of those that have been killed and those that are still being held captive. I recognize that pain. I see that fear and I see that terror. But I also recognize that resilience, that strength, that will to go on that is written all over their faces and bodies. And I want to say to each and every one of them, I am with you. I do not know the searing pain or horror of terrorism, of kidnapping, or of losing a cherished relative or loved one to war. But I do know the pain of losing a child to the useless enemy of disease. I do know the pain of losing a grandchild and the trauma of the unfathomable how and why could this happen. I feel and I am with all of you, and I know that you will triumph. I offer my thoughts, I offer all of my tefillot, and in the spirit of the 12-step program, I offer my experience, my strength, and my hope. Together, we will once again rejoice, and in our great pain, we will find more meaning, we will find more feeling, we will find more gratitude for all that we have. We will have more patience. We will have more tolerance. And we will have more acceptance of one another. We will have more ability to love and to cherish one another and to know without a shadow of a doubt it is our relationships with each other that is the most important thing that any of us have. I know that my experience has taught me greater tolerance for all, a deep, deep desire to understand and be part of the healing for individuals, for families, and communities. And if I ever thought that I was grateful for what I have before, it pales in comparison to the gratitude I now feel for everything that I have been given in my life. I have created meaning for myself in terms of tolerating every single type of person, of spreading that message of tolerance and acceptance to a generation that has been broken from all of the traumas that we have faced. I have made it my mission to spread the message of acceptance, to spread the message of tolerance and non-judgment, so that we may all live together in a unified harmony. Each and every presenter here has left me awestruck, and completely overwhelmed with what we are able to achieve. And I would like to end by really expressing my heartfelt gratitude of being part of such an incredible, unique, strong, and wonderful people. Thank you so much, and Am Yisrael Chai.
Amen. Thank you. Really very, very moving. And we should all have strength and have many occasions to celebrate and join together for happy occasions. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll take 40 seconds. Dr. Blumenthal, well, I know you've been here, and of course you were just mentioned. I want to thank you, and let's make you co-host, and we get started in half a minute.